and welcome to WBAA's Ask the Mayor. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. My guest this week, speaking to us by phone from his office, is Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes. We appreciate you, Mr. Mayor, being with us as always.
Good afternoon, Stan, and greetings from the city of Frankfort. I hope you all are staying warm in Lafayette today.
Not as warm as we were at the beginning of the week, but warm enough, I suppose.
You know what? I count ourselves very, very fortunate. No white stuff on the ground, so spring is here, hopefully.
We should say before we start our show today that this program has been pre-recorded with Mayor McBarnes, and so unfortunately we cannot take your phone calls on today's Ask the Mayor. Do want to remind you, though, that you can send emailed questions for any of our four mayors to ask@wbaa.org. You can also tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Well, we are, of course, Mr. Mayor, on the eve of the official start of spring, at least as the calendar tells us. What signifies that it's spring in Frankfort, as far as you're concerned?
People are out walking. They're enjoying the community. They're going from A to B on bicycles and by foot and jogging. As my fiance and I were out driving through the community this weekend, this past weekend, of course, we had a beautiful Sunday and a beautiful Monday. You know, I even saw some golfers going up and down our local links outside the Wesley Manor. So just seeing people get outside, truly enjoy the resources in terms of our park system that we have here in Frankfort, signifies springtime. And also, you know, we have a beautiful downtown campus of Ivy Tech, and there were some students out yesterday exploring on their laptops, reading and talking about homework between classes. So it's good to see spring finally get here, and hopefully it will stay like that until next December at least.
I wanted to start today's show in earnest by talking about a move that the city council recently made. They've instituted this e-filing system for city court cases. What is that going to allow the city to do that it couldn't do before, do you think?
Well, as we increase ourselves from a technological standpoint across the board, Stan, this program, entitled the Odyssey Program, will allow our court systems to become more efficient in the city of Frankfort. Obviously, we have a city court, and right now, because of the caseload that our city court has, what our judge mostly consumes his time with is property maintenance codes, code enforcement issues that get brought from our building inspector's department. The way I understand things is with this new Odyssey system, it will streamline that process, so we will be able to increase our caseload. We will be able to receive in more traffic citations that our police officers are writing on the streets, and this will expand our capability in terms of generating more revenue for the community by keeping those traffic citations that have been written in the city of Frankfort through our court system and in return back into City General to help our police officers go out and have the tools they need to catch the bad guys.
You mentioned the term that is given to this system. It's called Odyssey. Is this the same software the state uses to monitor its courts?
I am not sure on that, Stan. I do know that it is being advocated for on the state level. Judge Ponton, our city judge here, longtime city judge, was a big advocate for this program, and I know he is connected with several other smaller communities and the judicial systems there, and they have nothing but great things to say about the program. I know our clerk treasurer's office, who also aids in the help of court work, is also excited about this program. Anytime in a smaller community that we can implement technology to streamline our efforts and make things more efficient is a good thing. And in terms of the training that will take place, there's only a modest amount of dollars that will have to go into training. And in terms of an annual renewal fee to maintain our credibility with this software, we do not know of any at this time. So it sounds like a very minimal investment with a great rate of return.
You mentioned that you thought it would allow the law enforcement officers who are on the street to sort of process more citations. Can you expound a little bit on that? How does that work? I mean, I guess the person listening to this show might ordinarily think, well, what would stop a police officer from being able to give out any and all citations that they need to? But you sort of made it sound like there might be something of a technological barrier that this new system will help you overcome.
Well, what I meant by that is, Stan, in no way does this limit the ability of our officers to write citations. We're out and we're going to be writing citations. Nothing limits us from that. What this means is it will allow us to increase our caseload at the city court level. So instead of sending those traffic citations on to other courts, whether it be the Superior Court or the Circuit Court in Frankfort and Clinton County, those can come into our city court, which which will allow us to streamline that effort, make it more efficient, and ultimately return more revenue to the city. And those are citations that are being writ in the municipal boundaries of Frankfort. So we believe that's a great thing.
Let me ask you a little bit about the revenue side. Some of the city council members had said that they hoped it would do exactly that by maybe even doubling or tripling the number of cases the court can hear, getting back to a level that maybe it had heard in the past. But let me be a contrarian for a second. Is the court really supposed to be a key revenue generator for the city, or should it just be this kind of overseer that takes it, that makes sure that people follow the law?
Most definitely, Stan. We do not see our city court as a main generator of revenue for our community, but it does hold people accountable. You know, and let's be honest, those fining systems have been put in place into our country because we are a land that's ruled by law. And if individuals don't follow the law, then there is a penalty that goes along with that. These aren't major offenses, so obviously people normally don't see jail time from things like this, but if it means an additional $25 out of your pocket, you're probably going to think twice before running through that stop sign again. And if you think about it twice, then there's less likely of an opportunity of a young child getting hit by a car or an accident happening. So I do believe it provides that checks and balance system in terms of holding individuals accountable to the laws that we have in place in our community. And more than anything, that trumps all else.
Do you really want more cases in court? I mean, wouldn't it be better if people just followed the rules and didn't need to be brought to court?
Absolutely, but I don't think we're addressing this at that time, Stan. Of course, we want people to commit less crimes, no doubt about it, but if we can aid our city judge, who is an elected official, to make things more efficient and streamline the process, we're certainly going to do that. And, you know, and let's also keep in mind, the city judge, that's an elected position. The people elect him just like they elect me, and he'll go through a process this November in regards to that. So I'm sure the public will thoroughly vet this decision. They'll look at what it does for our community. They'll listen to our judge and how it positively or negatively affects our court systems. And then the democratic process will sort the rest out.
You said you don't want the court to be a major revenue generator, but if you're talking about a few hundred extra, say $25 citations for running a stop sign like you suggested, eventually you run into a few thousand dollars of extra revenue that you're generating. How do you keep the court from saying, well, if we can generate a few extra $1,000, what would stop us from generating a few more extra $1,000? How do you stop them from being reliant on whatever extra money they generate?
Well, this is all based upon people following the law, Stan. I want to point that out. If people aren't breaking the law, if people are abiding by the ordinances in the city of Frankfort, then they won't go to city court, which will mean less revenue from that arm of city government. We certainly don't want people going to city court, but unfortunately, it is a necessary diplomatic process in our society that we have that system of checks and balances. I don't believe that Judge Pontenon is truly looking at this mechanism as a way to bring in a lot of extra money for the city. I simply think he's looking at it as, I have a duty to the people of Frankfort, and if I can make a process more streamlined and more efficient, and I can accept more cases because that's what the people elected me to do, I can do that. And also, these are open public meetings. City court is held on certain Wednesdays of every month. I encourage people to get online, find out when those meetings are, look in your local newspaper, and show up and listen to the rulings yourself, because then you can make an educated decision on what's happening in our community.
Is there an amount of money that the city had hoped to either raise or save through doing this?
No, absolutely not. Again, you know, Judge Ponton was simply looking at the process, and I believe he came to the city council and said, I believe I could make my process more efficient, and I could push myself to provide an even higher level of service to the people of Frankfort, Indiana. That's why he presented it to the council. It was passed unanimously. Again, this will greatly aid our clerk treasurer's office in the amount of casework that they have already in making a streamlined process. That was the impetus behind the request, and the city council obliged.
I want to make it clear before I ask you this next question that in no way am I casting any aspersions on your city or on the law enforcement officers in the city, but since something like this came up recently in the news, I wanted to pose it to you. There are, of course, quite a number of law enforcement agencies and judicial agencies that partially fund their own operations across the entire country by revenue generated from doing the business that they do. But there are sometimes problems with this, and the recent Justice Department report in Ferguson, Missouri found exactly this. They found that the law enforcement agencies had become a significant revenue generator in part by possibly targeting people either by race in the case of Ferguson or targeting specific types of crime. How do you stop the city court or indeed the law enforcement officers who are charged with bringing people to city court from going anywhere near the sorts of overstepping of the boundaries that the Justice Department said happened in a place like Ferguson? And again, I'm not saying Clinton County or Frankfort or anything like Ferguson, Missouri, but I wanted to have you think on this for a second.
Sure. Again, I'm going to premise this. This process was requested and it was put in place to streamline and make our processes more efficient. And this was requested by an elected official. It wasn't requested by the mayor's office. It wasn't requested by the chief of police. If the judge, our elected city judge, would not have brought this to the city council, it wouldn't even be talked about right now. And to be honest with you, and I get out and I ride with our police officers a lot, you know, our police officers are focused on doing their job every day. They're not looking at the amount of money brought in from a city court and what that would mean to their paycheck or what that could potentially mean to the amount of equipment that they would have to do their jobs properly. They're concerned with upholding the law in the city of Frankfort. Now, if I see that going in the other direction as the executive of the city, I'll step in the middle of it. But I got to tell you, we have fantastic leadership in our city police department. We have fantastic police officers that are doing things for the right reasons, and I fully support them. And let's be honest, with what's happening nationally right now, it's not easy to be a police officer. Every move you make could literally alter the rest of your life. So right now, as a community, not looking at the potential revenue source of a city court system whatsoever, but simply looking at funds like City General and Public Low at Safety, how do we become creative, spin within our means, but give our police officers the resources they need, body cameras, the correct types of firearm training that they need, drug mitigation techniques, canine units to get the drugs off the streets in the city of Frankfort. I mean, we're pushing ourselves. Fighting crime in the 21st century is much different than fighting crime in the year 1960, 1970, or 1980. So we are trying to push ourselves as leaders to give our police officers the resources they need, not only to keep themselves safe and hold themselves accountable, but keep the community safe. And that's the thing that's on the top of my mind today.
I think your characterization is intensely accurate, that these are, by and large, duty-driven individuals who want to give something back to their community, who are civically engaged. But let me ask you the other side of it, just because I feel like I should, which is, because you have these duty-driven individuals who will now see that the city court wants more attention to some of these citations, wants to try to stop people from making some of these same mistakes again and again and again, and I think your example of running the stop sign is a very good and a very common one. If you see that that's happening as a police officer around you, that that's the environment you live in, how do you temper what you write a citation for versus what you give a warning for? Or how do you decide where you're putting your effort in terms of trying to be part of this larger culture that you might believe in? And if you believe that you're trying to stop people from being scofflaws down the line, it would seem like it's a little tough not to almost overreact in the short term to send that message that I think the judge wants to send in part by doing this, right?
Sure. And I understand, Stan, and it's your job to be devil's advocate and portray both sides. And listen, I appreciate these questions. I do, because this is a very pertinent subject in today's society. I know our leadership, and I meet with our police and law enforcement leadership on a weekly basis. Just this morning, so 2 days ago when our listeners hear this program, I meet with all department heads every Tuesday morning at 9 a.m., and we talk about priorities in their departments. I can tell you the priorities that we have in the city of Frankfort and our police department right now: drugs. We know we're never going to completely stop drugs in our community or our society, for that matter. We hear the term the war on drugs thrown around a lot, but listen, we want people to know if you're doing that kind of business in our community, we're eventually going to catch you, so do it somewhere else. We're going to disrupt your operations, and we're going to annoy you to the point that it's not going to happen in the city of Frankfort anymore. domestic violence and abuse. These are things also that we really keep a close eye on. And how do we know all of this is pertinent in our community? We listen to the people that we serve. We hold numerous police community meetings throughout the year, neighborhood connection events throughout the year, and we're listening to what people are seeing and smelling and hearing on the streets of Frankfort. And then we're becoming very tactical in our responses to that. I'll give you an example. 3 weeks ago, you asked how we address citations and warnings. I was with a police officer. I ride with our police officers just because I like to observe what they do. I like to listen to the individuals they interact with. It helps me as CEO of our community do a better job for them and also the constituents that I serve. We had an individual that was passing through town at about 10:30 at night. He was coming in on State Road 28 West. It's a four-lane highway, and he didn't realize the speed limit was a little bit lower than 60 miles an hour. This was his first time through Frankfort. He was very upfront. He was very honest with the officer. And we understand that if we would have given that person a citation in that instance, it probably would have put a very bad taste in his mouth. He wasn't being a reckless driver. He was going about 8 miles per hour over the allotted speed limit. So we simply ask him, slow down, watch it the next time. But, you know, we're happy that you're in Frankfort. And those are the kind of messages we want to send, because we know if we go out and we grind people and we write a lot of unnecessary citations, that then they are not going to trust the police department. And without that trust, looping back to this idea of the citizen voice, people aren't going to come out to our neighborhood connection events. People aren't going to come out to the mayor's afternoon out events and tell us what they're seeing, what they're hearing. Something small and minute to them might not be to us. We want them to call the police department, and that will allow us to hone our resources on these bigger issues of drugs, domestic abuse, and violence, and harassment throughout our community. And we're tackling those issues. We're seeing crime go down in our neighborhoods in terms of thefts and burglary. We have a very long way to go, but we're not going to give up. We're going to be relentless.
One last question on this, and then I promise I'll get off your case about it. You've mentioned traffic offenses, you've mentioned drugs, you've mentioned domestic violence. Are those among the types of crimes and offenses that you are trying to root out in doing this?
When I'm looking at numbers, I'm a big numbers person, and we look at what's called unified crime reports, and I have my police chief give me these on about a monthly basis. You know, I look at burglaries reported last year, and I look at thefts reported last year. And when I say last year, I'm talking about 2013, because we just started a brand new year. So our reported burglaries are down by 54 calls from 2013 to 2014. Citywide thefts also decreased from 211 in 2013 to 165 in 2014. So those were some of the biggest numbers, Stan, in 2012 and 2013, thefts and burglaries, and then also drug violations in the city of Frankfort. Those are the biggest things that we heard about when we went to our neighborhood connection events, and that's why we've been so diligent in addressing those in our tactical efforts throughout the city in terms of law enforcement.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski, and we're chatting this week with Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes. We'll say again, this program has been pre-recorded, so unfortunately we cannot take your phone calls during this program. But please do send us emails for any of our mayors. That email address, ask@wbaa.org. You can also tweet questions at WBAA News on Twitter. I wanted to ask you, kind of as an outgrowth of this, to give me an update on something you and I talked about several months ago, which was your push to eliminate blight in your city. How many cases, do you have a ballpark of how many cases have been settled without going to the hearing authority? And I also wondered how many times the city has had to take action because you couldn't reach a deal with a property owner.
Sure. So this is a very, very big focus of our administration right now. As I get out and I listen to the people that I serve constantly, comes to the top of the conversation is our housing stock. Rehabbing and restoring what we currently have, while at the same time going out and recruiting developers to come to our community to build new residences. You know, we're creating jobs in Frankfort. We've created 350 new jobs in the past 3 years, driven close to $70 million in investment. And that's a conservative number. But as we grow our community, we've got to have the housing stock that will support young professionals and these new jobs, good jobs, that are coming to our community. So we put the hearing authority in place. We worked with our city council to revise and revamp our current property maintenance codes. We worked with our city council to put more code enforcement officers on the ground. And before we get to the hearing authority, I do want to share some brief numbers because I think it's a testament to the work that's being done by the people of Frankfort. Investment values in our neighborhoods rose from $3.7 million in 2012 to $11.9 million in 2014. So the people of Frankfort are reacting. They're investing in our neighborhoods, and we're raising our expectations and standards. In the past 3 months, we've only had one property actually come before the hearing authority. It was a property located on Washington Street. It was owned by an individual that has several multifamily dwellings throughout the community. The property was tax delinquent. Unfortunately, this individual was in a position that nothing would be done. The structure was very unsafe. It's a neighborhood that many children are going up and down the streets on a daily basis. We definitely didn't want it to be a structure that a young person wandered into one day and got seriously hurt. So in that instance, the hearing authority did make a motion. It was seconded, and it was carried by all three of the hearing authority members to demolate that home through our unsafe building funds. It's really stabilized property values around that infill lot. The rest of the cases stand, and I believe to date, this year alone, our building inspector has written in the ballpark of around 30 properties that could potentially go through the hearing authority process. None of those have. Only one has. So our building inspector has been very diligent with working with property owners, setting out a compromisable timeline that's good for them, that's good for us, with that expectation of accountability. So the process seems to be working well, but we'll continue to vet the process and, if necessary, amend things to provide better results.
Speaking of that, the city recently did amend its unsafe building code, right?
We did, and that was actually a part of my State of the City address, and if individuals want to see the State of the City address, it is still archived online. You can go through our frankfort-in.gov website, and you can locate that. Basically, Stan, what I wanted to do with that is I pushed our city council, give me two more citizen appointments on the unsafe building code in terms of the hearing authority. I didn't want it to just be myself and the two Board of Works members. I wanted to put two citizen members on this hearing authority so we can incorporate more citizen voice, put objective thinkers on this very powerful body to hold everyone accountable and to make for a better process. So that passed on second reading at our last city council meeting this coming Monday night. If it does pass on third reading, we'll allow that amendment to be published. And then a little bit later, I will go through the process of appointing two more individuals on the hearing authority to help with this great initiative of neighborhood revitalization.
Do you have people already in mind who you'd like to fill those spots if you're given that opportunity?
Well, since it's such a hot topic in our community, there's been several people that have actually already approached me and said, listen, Mayor, I want to be a part of this effort. So I have not decided on anyone yet. I am continuing to listen to individuals. I encourage people out there, if you think you'd want to be involved in something like this, give me a call. We'll sit down, we'll talk about it, and after interviewing individuals, we'll plug the right people in and move forward.
The city council has already approved creation of a historic preservation commission as well, and that goes along with making sure that some of the aging buildings in your community are assessed for their historical value before anything really happens to them. I wondered what this does to your push that we've talked about on this program several times to renovate Old Stoney. Does it make it easier, harder? Does it do anything to that process?
Number one, I wholly support the passage of the historical guidelines for the South District, the Christian Ridge District, and our downtown historic district. I fully support creating a historic plan commission that will uphold these guidelines. They will truly be the enforcement arm of those guidelines in the community. We have some beautiful, beautiful Victorian homes, and I think to maintain that housing stock, we need to have those standards in place, no doubt about it. Does it make the Old Stoney project harder? No, it does not. Because this building is on the National Registry of Historic Buildings, everything has to be like build and like materials. This will be a competitive bidding process. Keep that in mind. We'll be looking for the best price. But in terms of the aesthetics of Old Stony, we're not cutting any corners. The clay tile roof, the refurbishment of the windows, the outside masonry work that will be cleaned up, it will look as though it did when this building was built. And hopefully 100 years from now, it will still have that same essence.
On to another topic. You recently spent a little bit of time at the State House talking about a Senate bill that affects annexation, and there are a number of annexation bills that are before the legislature this year. Tell us a little bit about Senate Bill 309 and why it matters to you.
Sure. So I'm a big believer that every decision we make as a local government, as a state government, it must be based around empowering individuals to create good jobs. And that includes local communities across the state of Indiana. Senate Bill 309 is a bill that has to do with when a community that owns a municipal electric utility annexes a new territory, that municipal electric service provider would not have the automatic authority to go into that newly annexed area and offer up service. Right now, as the law currently stands, when a community annexes, they can go through a legal process and be guaranteed that those new residents of that annexed territory, they will then be able to deliver electric to those individuals. And Senate Bill 309 really looks at this law. And number one, I applaud our legislators for revamping this to a current extent. I know that's their job, and it's their job to provide balance. As the legislation currently stands, I believe it's not in balance and actually could produce the unintended consequence of hindering economic driving resources of local communities. What it says as it stands now is as a community annexes a new territory, they would have to have a mutual agreement between an REMC or an IOU in order to provide a new consumer energy. And I am worried about this because if we're realistic for a second, why would it ever be in the best interest of an REMC or an IOU to mutually agree to put a customer aside to let someone else provide that customer with service? It's money out of their pocket. Now, I want everyone to understand, I respect REMCs, I respect IOUs, and let's be honest, they provide a lot of great energy and a lot of great jobs to the state of Indiana. But I want balance in this bill. Local communities utilize our utilities as economic development tools to go out and create jobs. We certainly create new relationships with industries, and then we pride ourselves on customer service. So I went down to the State House and I testified on this bill, and what I am proposing is this. If mutual agreements between electric providers will be the lay of the land, then I requested on a minimal basis, absent a mutual agreement, allowing a petition to occur by the customer to the Indiana Utilities Regulatory Commission in regards to their provider of electric services, keeping in mind that the customer would not be choosing the provider, rather petitioning the IURC to make an objective decision on what is best for the area. And I heavily premised that it should be noted that only a customer could trigger this petition, and this could only occur in a newly annexed territory. So this has already passed the Senate side. It's on the House side right now. I hope the legislators take this proposed amendment into account, and hopefully we can amend this bill before it passes out of the House and goes to the governor's desk in order to provide a sense of balance and to allow and empower local communities across the state of Indiana to continue to work with their electric utility to create jobs for their community.
In just our last 45 seconds or so, it seems like this would put the cities like yours that own their own utilities in more direct competition with the other electrical providers.
It would, Stan, but let's keep in mind, again, and I'm being realistic here, I don't mind competition, but I want it to be fair. A mutual agreement between electric providers isn't keeping the consumer in mind. This amendment would allow the consumer to have a choice, to have a voice, and to protect them. So if they said, listen, we want the IURC to take a good objective look at this and decide what is best, then let's let them do that in a fact-based and objective manner. And keep in mind, if local communities become landlocked, 15 or 20 20 years from now, as the inflation costs of electric services increase, that's going only to negatively impact my neighbors here in our city by driving their rates up. So all I'm saying is give us a fair seat at the table. Our electric utility is important to us. It's important to economic growth, and we want to keep Frankfort moving forward. And this bill, like all bills, should simply provide balance.
All right. Well, Mr. Mayor, that's all the time we've got for the show, but we appreciate your spending the time with us. And as always, I've got more questions. I'll just hang on to for next month.
Stan, thanks so much. Hope to see you on the streets of Frankfort very soon.
All right. Well, this has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. A reminder that you can send questions for any of our mayors to ask@WBAA.org. You can also tweet us questions @WBAA News on Twitter. And remember that all of these shows are archived at our website, WBAA.org. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. We'll be back next week with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton. Have a good rest of your day.